Religion has many victims, and these are the stories of how they survived. Hey, friends, and welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Heather.
And I'm Tamara. We're really grateful you're here with us today.
This week's conversation is an important one. Around here, we talk often about the harm that can happen inside high-control religious and institutional spaces. But today, we're going deeper.
Our guest, Tabitha, is a survivor of the troubled teen industry. She grew up in environments where fear, control, and punishment were normalized, and where young people were taught that obedience mattered more than their well-being.
Tabitha's story is heavy at times, but it's also powerful. She is living proof that survival can turn into strength, and that having your voice taken from you as a child doesn't mean you can't reclaim it as an adult.
And she hasn't just reclaimed it, she's using it. Tabitha is actively advocating for legislative change to protect people from the kind of institutional abuse she endured. She's working to shine the light where so many systems have tried to keep things hidden.
So as you listen today, we invite you to hold space with us. This isn't trauma for entertainment. This is a woman telling the truth honestly, bravely, and with the hope that awareness leads to real protection for the next generation.
And if you're a survivor of similar spaces, please take care while listening. Step away if you need to. Your well-being matters more than finishing an episode.
With that said, let's welcome Tabitha to the show. Welcome in, Tabitha.
Welcome, my friend.
We are so glad to have you here with us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm really glad to be here.
So, can you start by sharing a bit about your upbringing and the environment that you grew up in?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm adopted. I'm an adoptee. And when I was five, I was taken away from a abusive, alcoholic, drug addicted mother and put into foster care. And then when I was eight, I was in the same, fortunately, I was in the same foster care for 3 years. So I didn't have most of the stories about, you know, abusive foster homes and stuff like that. But when I was eight, I was adopted by the people I now call my parents. And when I refer to my parents, that's who I'm speaking about. And they were extremely, had very high expectations of what they thought that I should be and my siblings should be. And so, you know, we were church three times on Sunday, both the morning services and the evening service, church on Wednesday. And I loved God, and I loved church, and I loved getting people to come to my church. And I did have some behavioral issues. You know, I did lie a lot. I did manipulate a lot. But I think that had more to do with the trauma that I experienced in my first, you know, 7, 8 years before I was adopted. And so it was a very strict household. It was, you know, in the 90s, you know, a lot of houses were that way, where it was just strict in manual labor punishments, writing sentences, punishments, reading devotionals, and writing out your like rewriting the devotionals. And so the punishments were, you know, move rocks from one place to the other in our yard, and write 1,000 sentences on I will not lie, I will not manipulate. But it was very strict, and the expectations were very high, and I didn't fit the mold. I was extremely Christian. I believed in God, but I just was my own person. And I think that created a lot of conflict with me and my parents.
Individuality is not something that is accepted in high control religious spaces. Conformity is what is expected, but individuality is not. And if you know, are outside of that box that they want you to be in, you're going to have a hard time, because all they want to do is try and force you back into that box, right? And I'm curious, so what brand of faith was your family's that you were raised in? You know,
They were
we
not
know there's
a denominational Christian.
okay. So were they more like evangelicals or Pentecostals or more like, you know, super, you know, hardcore Baptist? What was that structure like?
If I had to put it in something, I would put it more towards Baptist, but
Yeah.
the churches that they go to themselves are not like a, they're not denominational. So it's not like it's a
Yeah.
Baptist church or a Pentecostal church or anything
And
like
I
that. But
want to
knowing what I
explain
know now.
to the listeners that may not understand what a non-denominational church is. So, you know, if you go down the road, you're probably going to see a Catholic church. You're probably going to see a Methodist church. But non-denominational churches have no oversight. They're not part of a larger group. So they can get away with a lot more extremism within their churches, and it goes completely unchecked because they don't have that oversight. So just keep that in mind as we're having these conversations, because non-denominational churches can be incredibly dangerous because of that lack of oversight, because of that lack of accountability, and they can be incredibly extreme in how their beliefs are taught and lived out and enforced within that church community. So continue talking.
Oh, and every church that's non-denominational has their own rules. It's not like a broader denomination
Yes.
to where if you go from one religion to, one denomination Baptist to another denomination Baptist, if you go to Southern Baptist or Missionary Baptist, you kind of know exactly what kind of service and what the layout is and what the scriptures or the Bible or what their mantra is. But with non-denominational, they can do it individually.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you really will not know what their core beliefs are from one non-denominational church to another until you're in it and you're part of it, really, because they vary so much in what it is that they hold to be most important to them as core beliefs. But continue talking, Tabitha.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, knowing what I know now, at the time, of course, I didn't know what religion it was closest to, like what denomination it was closest to. But now, knowing what I know about all the different, religion, all the different sects of Christianity, I would say is closest to, I would even put it as closest to IFB versus just regular
Yeah.
Baptist. Just because, like you said, they tend to be very extreme. It's all or nothing. It's you either behave and conform
Or else,
exactly to
like, yep.
this set of rules, or you're out of control and you're gonna go to hell, and it so yeah, I would put it some closest to Baptist.
And how do you feel those early experiences shaped the way you saw yourself at that time?
I think that the belief that I was a bad child, even though I wasn't, the constant criticisms and the constant basically being told that I wasn't enough, as someone who had already been through being taken away from my mother when I was 5, and then taken out of foster care that I had been at for 3 years, where I was already comfortable, I was already, just that change of no stability and no feeling of home. I think that it shaped a lot of why family and stability are so important to me today. And then also, because, and then when I was 12, I was sent to Jamaica. And I think that it completely made who I am today, because I value people so much more, and I value relationships so much more, because they weren't a consistent thing for me growing up.
Yeah. Now you said when you were 12, you were sent to Jamaica. You want to elaborate on that a little bit and tell us more about that story?
Did you like that segue there?
We
Well,
don't miss
we don't
anything.
miss it. We don't miss it.
So my parents sent me to a therapy or a behavior modification program in Jamaica called Tranquility Bay. It was part of the WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs, schools, therapeutic boarding schools, I guess. And they sent me because I was lying and manipulating. And again, I didn't fit the mold of what they thought they were going to get when they adopted me. I didn't conform to exactly the box. And because I'm a very outgoing, outspoken, or I used to be. Some days I wonder if I still am, but I was a very outgoing, outspoken, had my own opinions, had my own mindset, and that didn't fit into what they were doing. You know, I was one of those people that they're like, you know, jump off this bridge, and I'm like, why?
Me
Why are
too.
we
I
jumping
was
off
that way. Why are we just doing this? Exactly. That was me. Like,
the
this doesn't make sense.
Like
Oh
everyone
my
else is like,
God, I'm
okay,
not the
let's
only
jump off this
one.
bridge. And I'm like, why are we jumping off the
Listen, Heather, there's a reason why you and I are friends, okay?
bridge? Exactly. It's like, I don't want to get wet. Come on now.
Right. But I want to push back at Tabitha saying what she said just a second ago. Tabitha, you are strong and you are brave and you are using your voice here today and advocating beyond belief. And I just want to make sure that you know that.
Thank you, Tamara.
You're
So this was supposed to, I have, we've never actually spoken about why, like why my parents sent me there. They told the place it was because of lying and manipulating. I know it's because I didn't conform to the box and I didn't jump off the bridge. This was supposed to be a year-long experience of changing my behavior and making me fit into the box. And it ended up being a 4.5 year long experience where I experienced and witnessed emotional, mental, physical, sexual abuse. And later learned that it is a school inside of what is the called the troubled teen industry. And I was not the only one that came from a religious household where they asked why we were jumping off the bridge as well. And so that is where I grew up, basically. It was the longest time I had been somewhere. So it, because I was there from 12 until I was 17. And yeah. And then being trapped in a foreign country after you already have abandonment issues and issues of belonging, it creates a whole other level of childhood trauma and childhood beliefs of yourself that I still struggle with this to this day of feeling like, where exactly do I belong? And where exactly, like, where I still find myself looking to other people for validation and looking to other people for, am I doing something wrong? Or just a whole other slew of things. And not only that, but the trauma, the nightmares, the everything that comes with experiencing that in the formative years of your life is what I experience today. And every day it's a struggle. And every day it's, you know, because I find myself even doing these podcast interviews, I'm like trying to analyze everybody's facial expressions. Like, am I doing this wrong? Am I saying something wrong? Do I sound all right? I mean, is every, you know what I mean? It just is everybody going to get the point I'm trying to get across? It's me criticizing everything I'm doing because I'm afraid that it's not going to be right because I've been abandoned and judged so much my entire life that it's just, it's hard to get past that.
And here, we don't pass judgment and we accept you just the way you are and just the way you come to us.
Thank you.
So, at what point in your life did you begin to question your beliefs and the systems that you were raised in?
Sorry. Sorry, I got distracted. There's the, for those of you that aren't watching and are listening, my cat decided to make a visit.
And what is your cat's name?
This is Bug.
Bug, okay.
Yes. And she has clingy issues. She's very clingy.
She's
She likes to be
beautiful.
wherever I am. I have four of them, so there might be more periodically that show up. But
She's wonderful.
I'm so sorry, Heather. What was the question again?
At what point in your life did you begin to question the beliefs or the systems that you were raised in?
I think it was about a year after I was in Tranquility Bay, a year of dealing, because at that time I still thought I was going to get out in a year, and I thought I only had to endure what I was in doing for a year. And when it got past that year, I think that my beliefs in Christianity and in God and all of that kind of went out the window, because I'm like, at that point, it's like, I just don't believe that if there was a God, and with how devout I was, that he would have let me as a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old, go through all of that. There, for everything that he's supposed to be,
Speak
for
on
the
it.
love that he's supposed to show, there's just no way that I could justify believing in a God that would let me as a child go through the things that I went through. I just couldn't justify it anymore.
And what were those first questions? What did they feel like? Confusing, freeing, terrifying?
I think after knowing the Christian religion for as long as I had and being so deep into it, you know, because like I said, you know, we went all the time, and I was one of those kids that invited all my friends to from school into vacation Bible study that are still part of that religion today. And I think it was very confusing for me, because it was something that I had known, it was something that was comfortable, it was something that I truly believed with all of my heart. And I think it was very confusing for me, especially since I was in a program. I was in Jamaica, and I didn't have anybody, and I was 13 at the time, and I didn't have anybody to direct me in my thinking. I think it was just confusing, because I'm like, what do I do now? If that's not what I believe in, what exactly do I follow? What exactly do I believe in? What is right and what is wrong, and what will happen to me once I die now? You know, so I think it was extremely confusing for me, especially at 13 years old. It's a really young age to have an existential crisis.
And to even have those questions at 13 is heartbreaking, because 13 years old should be trying on makeup and lipstick and nude pair of jeans and, talking about their friends in school.
Or
And they have
what
those
boy they have a
things.
crush on, or whatever, you know,
The
like
boy. We're girls. It didn't
Jonathan Taylor
matter.
Thomas or whoever it was,
Right.
like, right?
Like, what's your favorite concert or your favorite movie or your favorite? And those things were completely robbed of a lot of us raised in high controlled religion,
Yes,
and
yes.
especially you being away from everything you know. I can't imagine how difficult that must have been.
It was.
So you had touched on this just a little bit earlier, but as you grew older, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced while trying to understand who you were, your identity, and your place in the world? Because I know patriarchy, you know, again, it tells women that we're to be in that box, we're to be seen, not heard, right? Silent, submissive. So what did that look like for you?
I first want to state that the troubled teen industry is like its own cult. You know, you have the
Yes.
IMB and the troubled, I have said this on my Facebook and in person many times, but the troubled teen industry is its own cult. They expect you to fit into a yet another box that it, and it's not religious based, at least not in mine. It wasn't. There are really a lot of religious based facilities in the troubled teen industry. Mine was not. So it wasn't a religious box that I had to fit into there. It was a behavior box, you know, but
Yeah.
it's seen, not heard, you know, don't create prop, you know, never question what you're told. It's basically the same thing, but it just doesn't, they don't like, they're not like, you know, you're gonna go to hell if you don't follow these rules. It's more like you're gonna become a drug addict and pregnant at 17 and never make anything of your life. And I think being told that every day for, you know, the thousands of days that I was there, I think made it really hard on me. And I know it made it really hard because on a lot of survivors, because you're in your formative years, you're where you're supposed to learn your identity and push boundaries and, you know, experience who you are. And you're not even in these places, you're not even allowed to speak, like, you at all. Like, you're not allowed to just like say something or say your opinion. And it's so easy to conform to what they want you to do, which is, go up the levels and then turn around and, be the tattletale on your peers. And it's the attack therapy that is there when they want you to stand up in group and share your feelings. But then right after that, they tell you that everything that bad happened in your life is your fault. And they tell you that you're wrong for how you feel. And that goes into the emotional and the mental abuse that I experienced there.
And it's
And
just
then if you
mental torment. Like they are literally mentally torturing you. Like that is horrific. That is so horrible. And I know like the troubled teen industry is so many abuse cases come out of that where they are beating kids, they're getting essayed, they're getting, neglected of food and water, like all kinds of crazy stuff. Or, like you said, the physical punishments, right? Like we got to do manual labor to, appease them or whatever, pay our penance for whatever they think we did wrong. But that, every bit of that is breaking you down in your most formative years, That is so heartbreaking.
And how did those challenges influence the way you made decisions or the way you're making decisions now that you're navigating adulthood? And when you entered into adulthood, or even when you left, when you came home, how did that whole experience?
Well, when I was finally came back to the United States from Tranquility Bay, I was put in an apartment by myself, and my parents had paid for a month of bills, and then like they're on your own. But at that time, we in these facilities, they don't teach you life skills. They don't teach you how to socialize. They don't teach you how to write a resume, look for a job, any of that stuff. So it was here, basically like dropping somebody in an environment that they have no idea what to do, no idea the next step. And I think that everything that happened in the program and the fact that I didn't conform to what they wanted, because I never moved up in the program, but I think that even though I didn't, I was so close to breaking in that program that it changed ultimately who I was. Because before I went into the program, I was a very outspoken, very friendly, very sociable person. And then I came out and I kind of went into myself. And I'm getting that back now. Like you see me and you're like, you're outgoing and you're outspoken and you're doing all these things. But 2 years ago, it wasn't that way. When I got out, I was very quiet and into myself. And I started telling people that I went to a boarding school, because every time I brought up that I was at a behavior modification program and I experienced what I experienced, I would get weird looks. I would get people that weren't believing me. I would get people, just not understanding what I was talking about. So I kind of just shut up about it. And I was like, okay, well, we're just going to say it's a boarding school. And even my husband, who I've been with for 16 years now, he didn't know the full extent until about 2 years ago, because I just got so tired of trying to explain it. I got so tired of being like, this is what I experienced. But I think that the experience of being of all the expectations of years from being with my adoptive parents, who expect me to fit into a box, and then being in a program that expects me to fit in a box, I am now more rebellious about any kind of box.
You, me too, us too. I love that. This is what I love about getting free from the patriarchy, because that is exactly it. We get free from the box and we say, come hell or high water over my dead body, you will get me back into that thing, because I'm not going back. I'm not going back in the box, honey.
And Tabitha, you know this. There's many of us out there that are just like you. I didn't start speaking out until I was 50, and I had been out 26 years. No one knew. When people asked me about my parents, I would say my parents had passed away. My brothers and sisters, they would ask me if I had siblings, and I would tell people I was an only child. And I didn't start speaking out until I was 50. So don't feel ever that you're alone on this journey. That is a very difficult decision and a very brave decision to have to make, saying, I will be damned. I'm going to speak and use my voice every day
Yes,
that I can.
every day. So when you think about the turning points in your life, what moments stand out as shifting your direction or helping you reclaim your voice?
So reclaiming my voice, the thing that changed that was 2 years ago, I don't know if you've heard of it, the documentary, the program Farms, Cults, and Kidnapping on Netflix came out about the troubled teen industry and specifically about the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs, which is where I went. And I didn't watch that because I don't feel the need to watch a documentary about things I experienced. I was lived it. I already know what happened. But the community, the survivor community started coming together. People started using their voices after that documentary because it created validation for us. It's like, because we've been silent for 20, 30, some for 40 years, and it gave us legitimacy to our trauma. And watching the community come together and realizing that so many survivors were struggling and wanting to do something about it is what reclaimed me to my voice. Because for me, the kind of person that I am, I'm very empathetic, I'm very outspoken, I love people of all kinds, and I'm the kind of person that heals best when I'm helping other people. When I can see some kind of tangible thing of, oh, I was able to help that person thrive in their life instead of just survive. Because so many of us survivors are so tired because we had no support when we came out. Many of us don't have contact with our families. We don't have friends. You know, a lot of when you're teenagers, you create friends that last lifetime. We didn't have that. I didn't have that. You know, I didn't have I don't have friends that I've had since high school because I got taken out of junior high and then I never went back. So I don't have friends that are like, oh, I've had this friend since we were in seventh grade. You know, we don't have the same kind of support system that teenagers should, or, you know, adults should have from when they were teenagers. So I think that the survivor community is that for us, you know, is that family, is that friends, because we all went through so many similar things. And even with the IFB too, you know, you guys are, you know, I'm telling my story and it's not even IFB and y'all are like, well, I can relate. I can relate. It's all the same. It really is. It's all the same trauma, just different tactics. Same tactics, different kinds of trauma, but it all leads to the same feelings and the same, you know, I didn't feel like I belonged. Let's not live in a box type of situation. But I think so. What helped me reclaim my voice was knowing that other survivors needed help. It wasn't just me. And I was like, okay, I can roll with that, you know?
And what did that healing start to look like once you realized those shifts were being made in your life?
I think my healing looks like Survivors Unrestrained as a whole. I think that
That's beautiful.
I think that helping survivors and helping them go from surviving to thriving and actually being able to enjoy life, because we've been dealing with this trauma for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, we all deserve to, we only get one life, or at least one life that we remember based on your beliefs about life and whether or not we, you know, are reincarnated or anything like that. And that we remember. So, you know, why does it have to be such a struggle? Why does it only have to involve dealing with trauma alone and not be like financial troubles, emotional troubles, mental troubles? I mean, community, I don't think that we were meant to live this life alone. And I think that anybody from any religion can agree to that, because community is important in any religion. Usually, it's not like if you're in a religion, it's so important to be alone. There's no religion that's like that. And so I think that community is so important. So that's why I started Survivors Unrestrained, and I'm creating a survivor community, because it is healing to me to have people around me that know what I'm going through, that, you know, I say something that might seem drastic to the general public, but a survivor's like, oh, I completely understand that. Like, I get that. I get why you feel that way. And or I'm like, you know, I don't talk to my parents, and it's, you know, people in the general public, but their family, And but being survivors, I'm like,
Right.
I totally understand why you don't talk to your family. You know what
Exactly.
I
We're
mean?
like, yeah,
Like,
I don't talk to mine
and
either.
two
So.
things. I want you to tell us about Survivors Unrestrained because I know that is a, I believe, a nonprofit organization that you started. Number
Yes.
one. And number two, it left me. I'm sorry. Keep going. So explain to us about the Survivor Unrestrained. I'm sorry.
So,
Shouldn't have
Survivors
hung up. Oh, I
Unrestrained.
know what I was going to say. I'm sorry.
A
And you know
petition.
what I found so nice at the meetup this summer, right? That we did you with the group. I love the fact that we could make the dark humor and everybody knew what we were talking about and we didn't have to explain. You know, when something came up and somebody was like, oh, yeah. And we were like, everyone would start laughing. And it was like this underlying, thing that everybody knew, and you didn't have to explain. It was like for the first time, I didn't have to care if people knew we were raised in a cult or high controlled religions, is because everybody there got it. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I felt so special about you is because you got it. I didn't have to explain. I didn't have to say, well, this is what I did, and this is what I did, and this is what I did. All I had to do was make a comment, and we could start laughing about it. And that's pretty fantastic. Now you can tell us about your organization.
Okay, so Survivors Unrestrained is a 501c3 organization that I founded and I'm CEO of. And we provide support and resources to survivors of institutional child abuse. We provide survivor meetups. We do two virtual meetups every week on Zoom, and we do in-person meetups, like we were just discussing, which are so important to get survivors out of isolation and in,
Yes.
because a lot of survivors are like, nobody's going to understand me. And they're not necessarily wrong about that. So getting people out there to talk to people that know what they're going through and can understand the dark humor and can
Yes.
understand the trauma is so important to healing. And, suicide
Yes.
rates are so high among survivors because they isolate, they feel so alone. And so getting survivors together is just so important for our mental and our emotional health. And, that's why we hold two virtual survivor meetups every week. But it's also important to do in-person ones because people need in-person human connection.
Yes.
It's so important. And because you can, even if you come to both survivor meetups during the week, the virtual ones, you can still feel like you're lacking that, like that physical connection to another human being. And, but yeah, so our goal is to eventually be the VA, but for survivors of institutional child abuse. So we will be all, we'll cover everything. Right now, it's mostly meetups and, we have a petition, the Protect the Kids Act, currently going to change to reform the troubled teen industry, including religious organizations, because they fall under the radar a lot because they use their, we are a religious organization, so we're exempt.
Yes, and we were talking about this on our last show. They're not mandated reporters. Religious institutions are not mandated reporters of child abuse. It happens all the time, and it's covered up, and pastors are swept off from one church to another church, and the children are the ones that continue to pay the price.
Yeah.
Yes.
And eventually we'll have educational resources because I know for me, I grad supposedly graduated high school in Tranquility Bay in Jamaica. But when I got out, my degree was useless because it wasn't accredited. And so I
Wow.
never actually graduated high school. And so GED, college, vocational school, specialty school, we want to provide that for survivors. We want to provide therapeutic services, whether that looks like sitting in a room with a therapist or going to, ride horses for equine therapy, whatever works,
Love
because
it.
let's be honest, sit down therapy doesn't work for everybody. And because of trauma, it especially doesn't work for everybody because of the so-called therapy we received when we were either at a troubled teen industry facility or in a religious program. it has made us too traumatized to even think about, like me. I won't sit down with a therapist, but being outdoors, helping people, all those things help me. So everybody heals differently. So I want to make sure everybody knows that everybody heals differently. There is no specific box of therapy
Yes, no.
for your healing process. But so eventually we want to be the VA for survivors. You know, we want to have everything, access to medical care.
I love
We
that.
also are working on a program where you could have another survivor go to doctor's appointments with you, because a lot of survivors are alone. They don't have friends and family, and it breaks my heart to think of somebody going to a doctor's appointment where they may hear bad news and going by themselves and having to deal with that by themselves, or going to surgery and knowing that they don't have anybody in the waiting room when statistics show that having a little bit of hope and having somebody that care for you actually help you make it through surgery.
Yes.
Your mental state does help what determine whether or not you make it through surgery successfully or not. And it just
And
breaks my heart that there's people out there.
dentist, having doctors that are trauma informed. I know for me, going to a dentist is a huge trigger. And for me to sit in that chair in the con being confined and then feeling all that pain. I can't tell you how many times I miss dentist appointments for those very reasons, Tabitha.
Yeah.
Well, what you're doing is absolutely incredible and super inspiring. So I got to ask you this. When you look at the person you are today, what part of your growth or resilience are you most proud of?
I'm proud that I never got in the box, that despite everybody in my entire life wanting me to get in a box for some reason, that I never got in the box. And not that it was easy. It was not easy not getting in the box. Getting in the box is easy. It's staying out of the box that's hard. And I'm proud of myself for that. I'm proud that I didn't fundamentally change who I was and my beliefs and the person that I am so that I could comply and, you know, work the program and graduate and, you know, not and I want to clarify, I know I said that I do not look down on anybody that did work the program or did graduate, because we all did what we thought was best for our survival.
Yeah, well.
And we all did what was required in order to get out of there, or what we thought was best to get out of there. And I do not look down on anybody that did work the program and did go up in the levels. I think that you did what was best for you and in moving up. But for me, for my personal experience, I am glad I did not get in the box, because I think it would have fundamentally changed the person I am. And I think that it possibly, for me, it might have turned me into one of those hurt people that end up hurting people instead of not hurting people. I think it would have made me angry and bitter. And I think that it would have changed me and my fundamental mental status. I think for me, it was very important that I stay out of the box, just because of who I am, how I speak, the fact that, I mean, even now, like I don't do my hair, I don't do makeup, you know what I mean? I'm just me, and I don't think that'll ever change. And not that there's anything wrong with people that wear makeup or do their hair. It's just not for me. It's not something that
Exactly.
I prioritize or value. And personally, I just don't feel like spending an hour or two every day doing my hair and makeup, but I'm lazy
Yep.
like that.
And
But
but let me tell you something. What is so important about what you're saying is that you're teaching us that everybody has a journey and everybody can live on the other side of trauma. We don't have to
and you
just
can
be
do
in
it on your
survival mode.
and you can do it on your own
Own
terms, in
terms.
your own way, in your own style. You know, you don't have to, like you said, you're not into the makeup and all that stuff. And that is so freaking beautiful, because that's who you are as a person. And I love the hell out of that for you, because
Not
I'll
only
be honest
that.
with you, it's exhausting spending all the time painting this thing.
And I'm going to say this as well. It is so difficult when you're raised to be perfect and you're raised to look a certain way, act a certain way, wear your clothes a certain way, dress a certain way, speak a certain way. It is so hard at my age to let go of that perfection
Yep.
and just be me, whoever that is. And people like you inspire me because imperfection is perfect.
Yeah. Because I mean, my
So
parents
how do
tried to
we
get
do it?
me into makeup and got me like professional lessons and glamour shots before I went to Jamaica. So I was 11, 12. So I mean, appearance was very important to them. And I think that's kind of why I defy now, you know, like why just, and plus society expects that. So I'm like always
Yes.
like defiant. And I'm like, well, if everybody expects it, I'm just not going to do it because that's just who I am. I'm like, okay. You know what
Yeah.
I mean? And whatever. You
And I
know,
think
you
that's
either
so
like me or you
important.
don't, and it's not going to be based on my makeup.
Exactly. It is based on the content of your character and nothing else. And that is why I fell in love with you, because it's like you are just so real and just so you
Yes.
that it's like it makes survivors say, it doesn't matter how we survived. It's about how we are living today.
It is. I care whether somebody is a good person, not whether or not they're wearing makeup.
Right. 100% agree with
Or
that.
who they love, or what religion they are, or any of the multitude of things that society has these unrealistic expectations of you for.
Crazy. It's
Exactly, because
crazy.
people would never think that an atheist and, over there, my Celtic Christian friend, minister, right, would ever be doing a podcast together, but it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's about the person you are and what you're doing with your life today. And it just takes
Yes.
away all the labels, it takes away all the performances, it takes away all the pressure. It just allows you to be in the moment.
So, Tabitha, before we close, is there anything important that you want to share that we haven't touched on yet? Is there anything, any word of encouragement you'd like to give the listeners today, or any piece of advice you'd like to give for them?
There's something very important I'd like to touch on. We currently have a petition called the Protect the Kids Act. It is a petition to reform the troubled teen industry. And all of the, so it is a federal bill, and we are trying to get a sponsor for it. So I would appreciate it if everybody could go look at it and sign it, because the more signatures, the more attention we will get for it. And I am trying, if this bill passes, it will cripple the troubled teen industry. It will turn these facilities only into mental health facilities and put them under like tremendous scrutiny for everything that they do. So it would eliminate kids being sent for any old reason, such as the reason my
This
parents
is
sent me.
incredible. Like, it would protect thousands of children from being harmed and abused like you were. This is
Yes.
incredible legislation to be rooting for. Like, wow, that's incredible.
And we need signatures. We need to promote it. We need to get it out there. We need to push it because it's so important, regardless of what journey or where you've come from or where you started in life, protecting our next generation. Tabitha, girl, you are good.
I will be sure that we put a link for that petition in the show notes, so any of our listeners that want to go sign it, you'll have a link to go directly to it so you can put your signature on it. This is really important, and I am so thankful that we've been able to talk about this and highlight this today, because your story is so powerful. You endured egregious treatment, and you have turned it around to be a voice for all those other kids. Whoo, dang, I'm getting teared
Right.
up over here.
I'm not crying because I'm sad. I'm crying because I'm so damn proud of you. I don't even know what to say right now.
Thank you.
We'll just be a bunch of weeping w women on this show. I'm wiping my nose. So
Right,
listen,
no judgment here.
if you've ever been
Thank you.
part of the troubled teen industry, or you have been part of conversion torture therapy, because I'm going to call it what it is, because it is conversion torture, my heart aches for you. My heart absolutely aches for you, because you deserved so much better. And you are not responsible for what it is that you had to do in order to survive the hell that you were put in. You are not responsible for that.
And everybody failed. Each
Yes.
one of these babies,
Yes.
everybody failed them. And it's time that we bring justice for
Yes.
those who have survived and those to make sure that it doesn't continue and, and to our next generations, that it's our job to protect our babies. And the fact that there's a bill out there, I'm telling the listeners today, please get on board. It is so important to make sure that this is stopped, that the atrocities, that the abuse and the neglect and the mental torture and the things that happened within those walls. And I'm sure there's a lot more that Tabitha could speak about today that she hasn't even mentioned. And it is so important to get this bill out there and to get our legislators and to get our public officials to understand that this is not just a once in a lifetime thing. This just didn't happen to one child. This just didn't happen to one little
Yes.
12-year-old girl that was adopted and went through hell. This is happening probably still today,
Yes.
over and over and over and over again. And we still have generations that are going to have to be like you and I and continue and Heather and continue our voices to say from the loudest mountaintop, this must stop.
Yes.
And finally, for anyone listening who feels lost, scared, or unsure of their worth, what would you want them to hear from you today?
I think it's important to remember that a healing journey is, again, not one size fits all. And that just if you see other people healing and you see them healing out loud and you're not able to, don't judge yourself for it, because everybody heals differently. And to all the survivors out there, if you're not able to tell your story publicly, I know how it feels to watch other survivors heal publicly and think something's wrong with you because you're not healing that same way. And just know that it's okay if you are never able to tell your story publicly, because we all heal differently. Some of us heal better out loud. I find myself healing better out loud, but some people heal better, in community or by themselves or with a safe person. And you don't healing is not always something that you see, see milestones for. It's not something outwardly that you can track. It's something that only you know, and something that measured was the word I was looking for. It can't be measured by any outside force, because you are the only one that knows where your healing journey is, how far you have to go, and what works for you. So find what works for you. And it is does not have to be. There's so many expectations of therapy being a sit down conversation between a therapist and someone. That is not the only way to heal. Sometimes you can heal by taking a walk through nature every day, or going to equine therapy, or having a farm. Some of the simplest things can be so healing. For me, it was starting a nonprofit. I mean, that's not the normal route that people go, but it's what worked for me. It's what's working for me. And, just remember that I don't think that there is ever a finish line with healing. I think it's going to be something that you deal with and you have triggers for your entire life. There's no finish line. There's no, oh, I need to get here. And it sucks. I would love to have a finish line, but I don't personally believe that there is one. And you just have to every day wake up and do what works for you to make it through that day and be better than you were yesterday.
I think that's why we call it a healing journey, right? Because the journey never ends. We're always on that quest, right?
And sometimes for me, it was just hugging my babies and know that I did it different. Know that I am not my mother and I am not my father. And I did not give up and I loved unconditionally for those moments that I couldn't speak out. It was just looking at my babies and saying, this was for you. And I did change. I'd made many mistakes, but I was not her.
And your healing in private is just as
Just
valid as
yeah.
somebody who is doing it publicly and on a platform and on a stage. Don't ever think that you are required to put out there what you're not comfortable with, period. Your story is your own. You have control over who gets to hear it and who doesn't. But whether you tell it or not does not invalidate what it is that you lived through.
Right. That is
So,
absolutely right.
Tabitha, I just want to say thank you so much for being on our show today. This has been such an incredible conversation. You are such a freaking badass. Like, I love it when we have women on this show that are out here getting shit done. So thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for
Thank
having
you.
me. I
And
loved
you know,
it.
Tabitha, I love you if nothing else. I mean, from the first time I saw you, your voice, the way you carry yourself, and the journey that you're I'm gonna cry has meant so much to me, you know, and that you opened your arms and it didn't matter where I came from or what was going on, you're accepting me. I can't tell you how important that was that day to me.
Oh,
Because
sorry, I'm making you cry now.
I know, because I, like many of the others that were there, have never done a meetup before. And I remember people talking, like everybody in the group, like the whole way there to meet up, right? They're like, we should turn around. We shouldn't go here. Well, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? I mean, I heard that from every survivor that was there, right? And then when we got there, it was like, oh, I'm so glad I'm here. I didn't know what to do, but it was such a struggle the whole hour driving to you and to the meetup. And I have to tell you that meetups may not be for everybody, but it was so important to me because that was the first time that I sat amongst others that had survived. I didn't realize that until I was there. And I almost talked myself out of it like 100 million times. You know, that internal thought, they won't like me. They won't accept me. I'm going to say something wrong. I'm going to do something wrong. I'm going to laugh at the wrong time. I'm going to like pop off and say something at the wrong time. And all of that was eliminated by the first hug. So thank you.
And to
I
our
love
listeners,
you.
I just want to say thank you guys so much for joining us for another episode of our wonderful show. If you guys like this episode, please hit that subscribe button and share this with somebody. Come on now. We need more listeners on this thing. We do appreciate every single one of you that shows up, though, every single week to listen to us banter and talk about religious trauma and abuse because it is a serious issue, and the things that people have lived through are horrific, and we are just grateful to have the opportunity to be able to share and uplift their voices and stories with all of you. So thank you for being here with us this week.
And please like, follow, share the bill and all of her contact information from her organization to the bill that she's trying to get out there will be put into the links. Make sure that once you sign it, you share it. Don't let it stop with you. We need this thing to go viral.
Absolutely. Woohoo! So thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
I love you, Tabitha. Thank you for being with us. I love you too.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.